Welcome everybody to the Comic Food. We are back after a week off sick. Somehow Derek and I both got sick, and we live in completely different parts of the world, or at least the continent. I don't know. Anyway, Derek, how the hell are you?
Oh, fantastic. Couldn't be better.
I'm still nasally and sick, so apparently my cold was better, so haha, I win.
Yes.
This week we're also joined by one Mr. Joey Caswell.
Hello?
Hello!
Uh-huh.
See, that was Derek's turn to go a little bit higher, but he wasn't paying attention.
I can't go that high.
I don't believe you, Derek. I don't believe you at all. I know you have a perfect singing voice. Before we get into this show, as always, the views and opinions are mine and Derek's, and now Joey's. He is now wrapped into this potential lawsuit in wait. yeah, they don't reflect allcomic.com. people that listen to the site or look at the site or work for the site or any of that, they're ours, and if you don't like it, well, too bad. So hey, today's Sunday. So you guys are listening to a Monday, so technically 2 days ago, because we're recording this in the past... it was Hellboy Day. 20 years of
Huzzah.
Hellboy. It was a hell of a day. No pun intended. Thanks for that, Derek. You're a great, good, swell guy.
Classy.
Yeah.
Classy.
Yeah. So, hey, a little bit of history on Hellboy for those that are brain dead and haven't read any Hellboy. Hellboy was created, obviously, his first issue and series came out 20 years ago. Of course, that's why Hellboy Day happened. He officially first appeared in Dime Press number 4, which is an Italian magazine, in 1993. He was gray and looked a little bit different than the one that we all know and love. Then he appeared in...
Like the Hulk.
There you go. Maybe yes. There you go. Like the Hulk first, and then he got madder and turned red. So he's weird gray to red Hulk. then he appeared in... I believe it was Next Men, Faith 3 of 4, some miniseries in John Byrne's title. He was on the cover. I own that. The story wasn't fantastic, to be honest with you, but I didn't read the rest of it. I just kind of read the Hellboy part and then owned it. So there's that. And then, of course, he got his own title on Dark Horse, and we can't love or thank Dark Horse enough for that. I believe it was March 1993 that Seed of Destruction number 1 officially came out. Again, 20 years. And so, yes, it's my favorite series. We've all talked about it. We've all heard me rant about it. It's my favorite character, and Mignola is my favorite creator, artist, writer, all of that fun stuff. So I'm going to try to let the other guys talk a little bit more, because you guys pretty much know how I feel about Hellboy. Joey, where does Hellboy rank among your pantheon of favorite characters?
Probably my favorite.
I don't blame you. And Mr. Mike Mignola, or Mignola, I've heard other people say it like that, and I feel like I've been saying it wrong this whole time, but
I've heard it said both ways, too.
Yeah, I might just stick to Mignola, and if I ever meet him, he'll have to beat me up because I say his name wrong or something. Who am I kidding? I won't be able to say words if I ever meet him. Anyway, where does Mignola rate on your creator list?
In terms of Hellboy, BPRD, the wider Hellboy universe, it's probably number one, really.
Well, yes, the universe, sure, the Mignolaverse, as it were. But what about the man, the myth, the legend? Where is he? One of your favorites?
He's it's Mike Mignola and Grant Morrison are my two absolute favorites.
I feel like Derek's list might be similar, but Derek, you recently finally caught up, did you not? More or less for this podcast, otherwise you weren't going to be allowed on the show.
Yeah, pretty much.
So where does Hellboy and the Mignolaverse?
I would say as far as like the character, I mean, he's kind of up there, but not real high. As far as the universe goes, I would say for me that's pretty high up there. I find the overall verse fascinating. It's really, really cool. It's I guess maybe Victorian, or
there,
I don't know. It's like a weird,
of,
like,
there is a lot of
I don't know.
Stuff,
man.
There is a lot of influence.
Yes.
Victorian stuff and H.P. Lovecraft. And
yes.
Stuff like that. And obviously, Witchfinder is set in Victorian London. Witchfinder is Sir Edward Grey, for those that don't know, and he's coming back for another series. His third one, I believe, in June.
Third one.
So, and Mignola is co-writing with somebody I haven't heard of before. It hasn't written in the universe before, so that could be interesting, could be great, could be weird. I don't know. I'm skeptical, but they got Tyler Crook on art, so I'm actually pretty stoked as far as that goes.
Right on.
Yeah, he's great. Okay, well, I guess, Derek, since you're the, I guess we'll say the rookiest of all of us, and I by no means claim to know everything. I have Hellboy Wiki up right now, just, you know, to make sure my facts are straight. But Derek, if you were in a comic store,
I was going to say I'm no comic book rookie. Let's just get that out of the way right now.
Yeah, no, Derek, you, it's fine. We're not making fun of you. I mean, as far as Hellboy is concerned, you're the rookie because you just read it for the first time.
Well, I've read Seed of Destruction like 50 million years ago. So, I mean, I'm aware.
Oh, for fuck's sakes, Derek. Just shut up and answer the goddamn question, you bastard.
Okay.
If somebody, both of you shut up. If somebody were to ask you in a comic shop, what do you think of Hellboy? Is it like, do you recommend it? How would you recommend Hellboy to somebody?
How would I recommend it?
Yeah, like, how do you explain Hellboy to somebody? I mean, again, I still think that you're the you have the freshest perspective, we'll say, maybe. That'll get you shut up about it.
I would probably say, that it's clever, like a Wes Anderson movie, and batshit crazy, like a Marvel comic in the 60s. And throw that together, and you would get Hellboy, and that's probably how I would describe it. I don't know.
I think that's a fair description.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know a whole lot of Wes Anderson movies, but that's a pretty good description.
Well, I mean, just, you know, horror and the classic comic book right there, that's a perfect description of it.
Yeah.
Joey, how would you...
Well, that's probably Wes Craven. You're probably thinking of Wes Craven. I'm talking about Wes Anderson, Rushmore.
Okay, gotcha.
Okay, I have no idea what you're talking about then.
All right.
I'm not a film guy like you. I watch some movies here and there, but that's it. I would not go see that hotel movie that you just went and saw. I'm just saying.
Wes Anderson.
I know that's the only
Grand one. Budapest Hotel.
Yeah, no, not for me. Anyway, Joey, Hellboy. How would you describe it?
Pretty similar to Derek's, I guess. There's a lot of classic comic book stuff. But it's really dark and occult, and there's a ton of really weird, interesting folklore and mythology in it. That's a really big part of it to me. So that's one of the things that I usually describe to people.
That's true. It's a lot. I think that almost seems to get lost sometimes when people talk about Hellboy, and, you know, because it's always like, oh yeah, he's a paranormal investigator, he does this, but the roots of the story being like Lovecraftian horror, and it's got all these myths and legends from. You know, Mignola's got like a book of old myth and legends, and it's, you know, 45 pounds of book, and he's been going through it going, hey, that's a wicked story. I bet you I could put Hellboy in that. And basically he takes the Mignola.
Well, even his origin story. Yes.
You went really robot-y there.
That's probably one of my favorite things.
These are some of my favorite things.
Even I was saying, even his origin story is just, it's adapted from an old folktale.
Yeah, that's true. Would you like to explain the folktale, Joey?
I've got the trades here with me.
Bear with us, everybody. It's live, and both their connections are crap, so, you know, sorry.
I can't remember it right now, the one for his origin.
I can't remember
Derek
exact...
and I both get on at the same time. We just garbage it up.
Yeah, I can't remember the exact myth either, but just suffice it to say that Mignola knows a lot of old, legend stuff, like the Baba Yaga is an old Russian one about this lady who can, like, make kids or make dead bodies come out of the ground or something crazy, and she's got a house with a chicken foot, and it's fucking crazy. There's like the Irish one with the horseshoe. If he was a demon or something hiding as a baby, and Hellboy like touches him with iron and it burns the little troll demon guy or whatever, And yep. Mignola pulled that out of, you know, I think it was Ireland, that one, some sort of Irish folktale. Stuff like that, right? It's got Morgan Le Fay in it, or Morgana Le Fay, sorry, and she's been around. Marvel has her own version.
Yep.
So he's got a lot of different ideas and styles maybe kind of crammed in, and I use the term loosely. They're really together. They're just mashed together in a really clever and interesting way. It all
fits together well.
Yeah, there's nothing, you know, it doesn't seem overcrowded, and it's just, it's like a regular guy who happens to be a demon in red, and he's, you know, investigating the stuff, and crazy shit happens all the time. He's got the worst luck, basically.
All the time. Hanging out with ghosts and shit.
Oh, yeah, getting drunk with ghosts. And
yeah. That's pretty awesome. Okay, so yeah. The Chained Coffin, that's the origin story, right, with Hellboy's mom?
Right, and the...
So that's from an original English folktale, and he took basically some of the more prominent features of it, like the mother-father angle and the witch's deathbed confession and stuff like that, and apparently even the horse covered in hooks...
Oh yeah,
in that one. That's in the original folktale too.
I can totally picture that one. That was a great one.
Yeah,
that was right after Seed of Destruction and Wake the Devil when he did. And actually, I think that trade has the Iron Shoes that we were just talking about.
Yes, it does.
Yes, it does. That's the one that follows the Chained Coffin.
Yeah, and it's got that wicked short the corpse in it.
Yes.
Yes. Yep.
For those that have seen the Hellboy movies, the corpse that he pulls out of the ground and he's riding on his back for a while. He's got the noose around his neck. And he's it's like an old Russian corpse, and he's trying to tell him where to go or whatever. That's taken from that story.
I got to go back and rewatch those. I saw the movies long before I read the books.
Yeah, you know what? And you know, we're talking about the movies anyway. Let's just maybe take a little detour in those. you haven't seen them for a while, Joey. I pretty much watch them like anytime they're on TV or anything. I always felt the second one was a little better because it felt like they had more money and they made it a little bit bigger.
They had all the cool fantasy stuff with all the elves. Yeah,
they really went a little crazy on that as far as that went, and it was a little more out there. The first one was a little more action filmy than anything else.
I agree.
But I do like how they did Ron Perlman. I mean, obviously, you know, they can't make Hellboy the same as the comic. I mean, he can't have hooves and.
Oh, I thought he did a great job.
I think so too. And damn shame that we'll probably never get a third one. But you know, it was still a. Still a really, really good job for something as obscure. And I think it did a lot better than they expected it to as well.
Well, see, now what we're going to say is the comparisons between the two, right? Because the movies are more action-oriented. And for I think it seems that they're intended a lot more for a wider audience.
Yeah.
Which is usually the case with the film anyways, right?
Yeah, I almost want to use the term they've dumbed it down a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, I personally don't like the Liz portrayal in either of the movies.
Oh, neither do I. That's the one character that I don't like.
I think she's awful. I thought they did a great job with Abe.
Me too. Yeah. Okay. Right on.
Yeah. Their Rasputin was really good. I thought. I think I like how they pulled like basically word for or not word for word but scene for scene, in the opening of the first movie they pulled from the comic, of the World War II stuff and how Hellboy kind of just you know came to being.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
I just finished reading it, so it was a good reminder of how exact pretty much they got it. From there, it kind of trails like Hellboy's thing with cats and Hellboy's things with guns. And it was funny, Mark Tweedle, there's another... Every time I talk about Hellboy, I talk about this guy because I'm super jealous.
He writes about him all the time, right?
Yeah, he writes on Multiversity, and that's the only time you guys will ever hear me talk about another slide on this podcast. And I simply say it because he does a hell of a good job. And
yeah, he does, definitely.
He knows his stuff through and through, and maybe one day I'll have to convince him to come on this podcast and play with the dumb kids for a while. no offense to Scientist Joey and Dr. Derek over there.
Oh, that's great, man.
But
hilarious.
But he was saying on Twitter, just kind of a rant, because it's Hellboy Day and everybody's talking about it, and he says, you know, something along the lines of... Hellboy doesn't fucking like guns and he doesn't like cats. That's the fucking movie. Leave it alone. Like something to that extent. I'm sure I'm adding swears because I like to do that.
Yeah.
But I guess a lot of people were talking about how, you know, Hellboy's gun, which is featured very prominently in the movie because again, it's more action. And then he mentioned and reminded me of Hellboy was trying to shoot some demon in the comics, and he kept missing because he's a terrible shot, so he just threw the gun.
Yeah, they always make fun of him.
Yeah, so
even
just...
Kate Corgan makes fun of him.
Yeah, he just throws the gun at the demon and says, ah, screw it, and, like, goes and punches him. You know, so stuff like that. I mean, I understand why they did it. But, I mean, you know, because of my connection to the comics, stuff like that, like, when you see the replica of the gun, whatever it's called, as a statue, it's like, I don't really have... Like an attachment to go and buy that. I mean, I'll get lots of other Hellboy statues, but the gun, I don't know.
Because it's associated with the movie to me too.
Yeah, it's completely the movie.
Well, but again, you got to think there's no way that they were planning on ever getting to the Arthurian legend stuff in the movies, and that's the big part of Hellboy being comfortable with a sword, right?
Yeah, and there's another thing people that forget about too, or maybe that don't give Hellboy enough of a chance. Lots of the Arthurian legend stuff towards the end, like the Wild Hunt and the Storm and the Fury and Darkness Calls, pretty much all the stuff that has Duncan Fegredo in it, who takes over for Mignola after the Island series, because the Island series just burnt Mignola out for doing art because it was so, you know, complex and stuff. And Duncan Fegredo, man, my hat to him. He took Hellboy and kept it similar but made it his own design, like it was more detailed, and man, some of those scenes, those two library editions where it's all him, those are some of my favorite. I mean, obviously, Mignola's my number one, but Fegredo's a close second.
Oh, I agree. Like you said, he does a perfect job of adapting Mike's style himself. It looks very similar, but it looks like somebody else's. Like you said, he's got his own stamp on it.
Yeah, and it's so much more detailed. Like, you just take a look at Hellboy in Hell and you put it against like a Fegredo thing, and it's like, you know, night and day as far as detail, because Mignola's more about, okay, this is the point, and that's all I really want. Something I noticed and then read about later, I bought a book called Panel Dissection or something, simply because it had a big Mignola section. It talks about different artists and stuff, but I've only ever read the Mignola section, and it was like a $20 book, and the Mignola one's like 20 pages. It was worth it. So anyway, something I didn't notice until I read it, really, was when Mignola draws a panel where somebody's talking, the background's just blank for the most part. Some of his earlier stuff, he's got some detail, but for the most part, it's blank because he purposely wanted them to focus on the character and what they're saying. He's like, it has nothing to do with them in the background. It doesn't matter if they're standing in front of a McDonald's or whatever. Like, it doesn't matter. It's the character and what they're saying that matters.
But then look at all the little side panels that he always includes that focus in on a specific detail from the background.
Yeah, just a random panel of an owl or something. Yeah, yeah.
Which is awesome. He does that in everything, and it's so cool.
Yeah. Oh, you gotta love that. And I mean, I don't know. I think if you compare it to Fegredo, I think even during all this talking, like, Fegredo had a background, and like it was just Mignola on 11 as far as details. And
yeah, that's true. That's a good way of putting it.
But it was still Hellboy, but it was his own. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and even talking about it right now, like, I just started reading the library edition, the first one again, for like the third time, and about halfway through, and now I want to go and jump to all the Fegredo stuff.
Yeah, straight off
that. Just because it's so epic, and that story is the stories that those four stories, I guess, the main ones, Darkness Calls, The Wild Hunt, Storm and the Fury, is what leads to Hellboy being in Hell, you know?
Yeah. The Wild Hunt is one of my two favorite Hellboy stories. Probably my favorite.
You know what? I don't know if I've said this before, but my very first Hellboy ever was the Fury number one.
Oh, get out of town.
No. First one ever. I bought it because the cover was so badass, and a matter of fact, eventually I'm going to get that tattooed. My first Hellboy tattoo. I have a couple planned.
Yeah.
Just the cover with him and the sword. He's missing the eye, and you can tell, like, he's like, you know, something big is coming, just his expression on his face. Yeah, that was the first one I ever read. The day it came out, I was getting back into comics and just kind of walked by. I'm like, hey, what's this? And picked it up and flipped through it. I'm like, oh, this is awesome. So that might explain why I'm also, you know, that much more connected to Fegredo than maybe most people that started with Mignola.
Let me admit something to you quick right here then. When I first started getting back into comic books a number of years ago, Hellboy was the number one thing that I was interested in checking out. But when I first picked up a Hellboy book, I didn't like the artwork.
Was that because it was Richard Corbin?
No, it was Mike Mignola.
Oh.
See, but I didn't get it at the time.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, it just it's different. I like, I think it was Alan Moore that called it like Jack Kirby mixed with something else. It was kind of like trying to describe
that's
the style.
Alan Moore, yeah.
Right? And you could see it, but I could see how the, if you're used to comics and the like lots of detail and all that stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Jump into that. Derek, are you still alive over there?
Yeah, I tried to say about 30 things, but I couldn't really get in. So
once we get going, man, it's dangerous. Sorry.
No, it's fine. It's fine.
I didn't even hear you. Like, I didn't hear
it. Yeah, I was trying. Yeah, I was trying to butt in, and yeah, it just wasn't working out. It's all right. Whatever. Whatever. It's gone now.
Okay.
Well, I never.
What's your first Hellboy issue then? And what's your first one? What did you
think? What was that? The 10-cent. 25 cent
the corpse.
25 cent. Yeah, that was the first one that I ever picked up.
Yeah, I remember that one. I went back and I picked that one. I have everything. I went back and bought all the singles. I don't do this.
Yeah.
I don't do this for a lot, but I have everything except for the Conqueror Worm number one and another one that's escaping me right now. But I remember finding that 25 cent one, going, "Oh, hey, this is pretty cool."
yeah.
Well,
yeah,
it was only the artwork, Derek.
And it was only 25 cents too, so you know it was awesome.
Yeah, yeah. They need to do that more often. I mean, the $1 books are great too. I think they're going to reissue BPRD number one, and I think I saw Hellboy number one is going to get a $1 issue.
Around the same time, DC also had a Batman 10-cent adventure, which was really cool. Like, so they started to like do that, and then just kind of broke away from it.
Well, I don't know. Like something that's been around for 20 years. Why? Well, like, he could almost give away Hellboy number one for free. Like, who cares?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
By this point, he's made the money. Like, what difference does it make if you reissue it? Right? If anything, it'll make people go buy trades.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, do you want to go through? Speaking of the trades, do you want to go through each of the volumes?
Well, see, I got them. I read the first two trades and then jumped to library editions.
Oh.
So I don't know them as that, and Derek doesn't buy trades at all, I don't think. Derek, you have it all.
Well, I know. I mean, we can just go over the main stories.
No, if I can help it, I try not to buy trades. I like the single issues.
So how did you catch up on Hellboy? Did you find all the issues?
No, trades.
Oh, you did buy trades. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Well, it's up to you. Let's grab a list here. Where are you, trade list? Because there's a lot. I mean, we won't really talk about the BPRD trades. We'll kind of stick more to Hellboy.
Yeah, we'll skim over some of the other Mignolverse stuff, but mostly stick to Hellboy, I guess.
Okay. Seed of Destruction, number one, first published in October 1994. It was Seed of Destruction 1-4. It had the SDCC, which actually predates Seed of Destruction number one. It's a little short story. And then there was a little something else in there. What did you guys, what's your thoughts on the first one? If you guys want to break it that way.
Derek?
You know what? This is, I enjoy it, but, it's probably one of the weaker ones.
You know what? Reading it again, because I finished those four, or I'm just about to finish them before. It's very John Byrne because he wrote the script.
Yes,
he did. It's Mignola's story. So it's really wordy and it doesn't feel like the characters that I know. I totally see that. I mean, the art is great, and the story for what it is great. But yes. I do agree. It's too John Byrne, too wordy, and it's great that he tried to help Mignola out and get it off the ground. But
don't get me wrong, I fucking love John Byrne, but like it's Hellboy, but it's like. It's there, but it's you know it doesn't really open up until like the
Wake the Devil,
which is my personal favorite.
A lot of people like that one the best.
Yeah,
it's because it's when Mignola let loose and did it himself.
Oh, I think Wake the Devil's one of the better ones. I think it's awesome. I'm just saying.
Yeah, yeah, that's my favorite one, and there's a very Bram Stoker kind of feel to it.
Yeah. And Mike Mignola's a huge vampire guy, Dracula.
Yeah. Which
his all-time favorite.
Yeah, I'm not a huge vampire guy, but I do appreciate classic literature, and so the whole, you know, little like nods to Bram Stoker's Dracula just gets me a little giddy.
Well, he uses the real classic horror feel for everything. It's not like cheesy new vampires, you know.
Yeah, there's no fucking sparkles, everybody. Let's just get that out there right now.
Well, there's a ton of really important stuff that's introduced in Seed of Destruction, though. You got Rasputin and Project Ragnarok and the frogs.
Oh, it's definitely important for years and years to come. I mean, yeah. BPRD has four omnibuses that are called Plague of Frogs.
And it started in Seed of Destruction. Like, that's amazing.
Yeah, like, one of them escaped and got away, and that's, you know what I mean? But yep. It's really, I just wanted to bring back to Dracula for a minute. In the Library Edition, as you're coming into Wake of the Devil, he dedicates it to Dracula.
That's in the trade as well, yeah.
Oh, is it in the trades? Yeah, I can't remember the trades at all.
He typically dedicates, I mean, sometimes it's, you know, people he's worked with, but a lot of the times he dedicates it to, like, classic literature and stuff that influenced that particular story.
Yeah.
Like, some of the Lobster Johnson stuff is dedicated to The Shadow.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Big time.
So, but Rasputin is, he's in the movie too.
Yeah, right? we talked about him.
Yeah, okay, so there's a lot of stuff from Seed of Destruction is in that first movie.
Yeah, the first one, I would say it plays the most towards the comic, regardless of its little differences and whatever. The second one, I think, was more original story, because I don't think that story is in a comics at all. Matter of fact, I'm 95% sure it was never a comic story.
Yeah, that's right.
The Golden Army, and there was never that big of a love connection between Liz and Hellboy that I can remember. I mean, they were...
Also right.
They were close, but they were, you know, and there was no stupid two baby crap. I hated that at the end. That I really liked the second movie, but that two baby thing at the end, I was like, nope, don't.
You know where I think they got the Hellboy and the cats thing in the movies? There's
Beasts of Burden.
Oh, that must be it, where all the cats are following him out of the house.
Yeah, because he did that one crossover with that Jill Thompson's Beast of Burden like one time.
Oh, okay. See, I'm not familiar with the crossover.
I never read it either. I just know it exists. I don't have any desire to go buy it, to be honest with you. I own the Goon crossover and this and that, but did you read it, Derek? You kind of made a noise.
No, I didn't even read it. No, I was just like, nah, no. As soon as you said you had no desire to read it, I was just like, nah, nah.
Derek says it's out.
Destruction is, you know, there's some important stuff that's introduced, and it plays a major role in the Mignolaverse for, like Tyler said, years to come. But it's not quite the Hellboy that we come to know eventually.
No, exactly. It's still too wrapped in a burn. And he still has, I mean, again, the credits are story Mignola, script John Byrne.
That's right.
So Mignola probably said, "Hey, I want this to happen," and then Byrne just said, "Okay," and then went and did it. And like the first like five pages, it's like the really wordy like war journal or whatever, and it's just like, oh fuck, I just want to get into it. Like, show me Rasputin and let's get to it, you know?
But, well, then we get to Wake the Devil.
Yes, then we get to Wake the Devil. Which, I haven't read in a while, so I'm a little rusty on that one. But I do remember it being much better. As much as I love Seed of Destruction, it was much better. It was all Mignola, art and story. And, yeah, it was just great. I don't know how else to say it.
Derek, you said that's one of your favorites, right?
Yeah. Oh, it's my favorite, yeah.
Oh, that's your favorite from Hellboy?
I think so, yeah.
One of the cooler parts, probably the introduction of Hecate, who, again, another character that plays big role throughout the series.
Yes.
Her origin, for anybody who hasn't read it, the Iron Maiden that's given to Rasputin from the Baba Yaga, the Russian folklore witch that Tyler was talking about.
Yep.
And Ilse Halbstein, one of the Nazis in Project Ragnarok, gets inside. And they close it up, and it kills her, and Hecate takes over this Iron Maiden with the Nazi corpse in it. So how's that for a villain?
Yeah.
What?
No, I was just going to say, that's like vintage, like Silver Age Marvel shit right there, and that's why I love it.
That's amazing. I think it's so fucking cool and creative.
Isn't this the beginning of Roger, too?
It is. That's his first appearance when they find him in the old alchemist lab.
Yeah. And this same castle plays in Lobster Johnson, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Years before. And okay. The vampire...
I've got a question for you, Tyler.
What?
Is Jurescu the vampire that they find at the end of BPRD Vampire? Because I don't remember. I know I'm getting a little sidetracked here, but I got to ask while I'm remembering this.
Well, no, the vampire in this one is the Vladimir Gershu or whatever the hell.
Yeah, Jurescu.
Oh, Jurescu. Okay, see, you say things better than I say things, apparently. I do, you know what? I only read Vampires once.
Same here, that's why I don't remember.
I'm pretty sure he did show up in there.
Yeah,
he's
so
like,
again,
he's like
I mean,
the big vampire badass. And
that's what I thought. And again, Wake the Devil is pretty early Hellboy. So when that one was 96, I think?
97.
97. Okay, well, that's still pretty
early.
Oh,
sorry,
early,
no. The trade is 97. Yeah, yeah. The issues were June to October 96.
So that one, they're getting Project Ragnarok going still and everything, and Rasputin and everything. So it's really occult and everything, but it's not as heavy on the wide-ranging folklore and mythology that he starts to put in with all the weird fantasy and stuff later on.
Yeah, that happens a little later, I think, when he kind of... I still don't think he knew what Hellboy was or where it could go in Wake the Devil. I think Mignola was still kind of creating the universe as he was going, as opposed to having a big, long plan. Like, I guarantee you when he wrote this, he wasn't thinking, hey, I'm going to write a story about Lobster Johnson and have him in this castle. Like, although, did Lobster Johnson appear as a ghost in this one?
No, that's Conqueror Worm.
But Conqueror Worm was part of the trade, was it not?
It's its own trade.
Oh, no. So I'm thinking of almost Colossus, which is something else in Chain Coffin, so.
Yeah.
But yes, okay. Yes. That was a different one. So anyway, my point still stands where I don't think that these, you know, characters and whatnot, I don't think he had planned far ahead as far as he was going, you know, like, where's Roger going to go and where's, you know, all this other stuff is going to go and happen.
Well, some of the stuff pops up and you don't pay much attention to it until it becomes important, like 10 years later.
Yeah.
Which is pretty crazy. But he starts giving more background on, like, the Ogdru Jihad and all that kind of weird stuff that...
That's got to be the thing that he pulled the most out of Lovecraft, I think. That kind of crazy villain. And obviously all the tentacle monsters in, like, Seed of Destruction and stuff. That's total Lovecraft. Anything tentacle I see now, I'm like, oh, that's Lovecraft.
And he's got the Women of Thessaly, too. The weird witches that turn into birds.
Oh, yeah. And that's in this one?
Yeah, it is. That's in Wake the Devil. So that's Greek, if I'm not mistaken.
Hmm. Yeah, see, Derek and I are, you know, relatively smart guys, but Joey's going to be a doctor, scientist, man. So he's a lot smarter than us.
Doesn't mean anything.
And Derek can't talk right now because he's in awe of Joey's...
No. I'm definitely not a scientist. The only science I know is to basically I know just enough to shut religious people up. That's the only thing I know. Yeah.
What is it like? Prove it. Prove it with science. Beat you. Like, come on. Yeah.
I know just enough to win arguments with certain types of people, we'll say, and not that it's too hard.
Yeah,
but
okay.
So, Wake the Devil covered that.
Yes. The next one is The Chain Coffin and Others, and this was the first time where we kind of got the idea where Mignola wanted to do little short stories here and there. Like, Wake the Devil was 5 issues, Seed was 4, and then kind of after this, for a little bit anyway, he's got, you know, one story, two story. Like, he's not doing big epics. I guess The Conqueror Worm was 4 as well, but... Mignola kind of starts writing just little stories here and there in the universe, expanding on characters and plots and whatnot.
Yeah, so for the next two trades then, we got The Chain Coffin and Others and The Right Hand of Doom.
There you go.
Like you're saying, they're all short stories. And some of them are like, you know, 2 pages in length, but they're all awesome.
A good example of that is in the Right Hand of Doom, which is called Pancakes. Anybody who knows Hellboy should know this one.
I knew you were going to say that.
I think it was one of the originals that he did. It's just a short story where they try to feed Hellboy some Pam cakes. He says it was an M. And then he's like, I don't want them. And they like make
that,
him eat.
Yeah, kid Hellboy.
Yeah, they make him eat it. And he's like, oh, these are great. And then like it cuts to hell and they're like, oh, we're doomed. all because
Hellboy
of
has tasted pancakes. Our fate is sealed.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, there's little stuff
like
that. You've
lost him forever.
This is the one that's got the first short story with the Baba Yaga, so it kind of explains her more, even though you saw her in the trade before.
This explains when Hellboy shoots her in the eye.
Yeah, when she loses her first eye. This has got the Wolves of St. August, which I thought was a great story, and I think that's an old folktale as well.
Yes, it is. Practically everything in this.
This one's actually known for, like, this is when really Magnolia really, like, exposed his love of, like, folklore.
Yeah.
Yeah. The third one, he kind of opened up. Like, every trade, he gets better, and it gets more deep, and, you know. This has got the Iron Shoes that we talked about.
And the corpse, yeah.
The corpse.
And the corpse is Mike Mignola's favorite, it says. He writes on the inside of the trade.
Yeah, he did. I do remember reading and hearing him say that corpse is probably his favorite story he's ever done. But that was an old one. I wonder if Hellboy in Hell has become his favorite since, but we'll see.
Yeah.
This has got Almost Colossus, which has got the big homunculus in it or whatever.
Yep.
The giant one that...
made out of human fat.
Yeah, and it's like Roger ends up calling it like his dad or something, doesn't he? Like there's some sort of connection between the two.
His brother is the one
who makes it.
Inhabits it. And he wants Roger to join him in the body.
Right, right.
It's so weird.
Yeah, that's right, guys. A giant, weird thing made of human fat wants another one to join him. It's good times.
For those that don't know, Roger the homunculus is... how would you describe
him? He's even got to correct me on how I say it, because he's that much of an asshole.
I wasn't correcting shit.
I would describe Roger as a hilarious, pantsless dude that in BPRD becomes one of my favorite characters, especially around the time that Dynamo shows up and he tries to be all badass and Roger's got like the cigar and the big vest on and stuff.
Yeah, he's always smoking a cigar with, like you said, with Daimyo, yeah.
Very cool. Daimyo or whatever his name is, yeah.
I don't know how you pronounce that one.
Yeah, I don't know. He turns into a cool, like, cat monster guy, so we'll just say that.
Roger is not a man. He's an artificial man, basically, that was built by an alchemist in, like, the 1500s or something.
Yeah, and Liz Sherman's flame brings him to life.
Yeah.
So
there we go. That's Roger.
Yeah, and I don't remember where they got the name from. Like, they explain where they got Abe Sapien's name from, but I don't remember them ever explaining where Roger's name came from.
I just reread that one before we did the podcast. So basically they kill the big human fat homunculus thing and they bring Roger back to the BPRD and Hellboy just calling him Roger as soon as they get in. And somebody's confused by that and Kate says he named him Roger in the car on the way over and that's it.
Oh, see, there you go. Not as clever as Abe Sapien taking his name from the Sapien note on his tank and the fact that they found him on Abraham Lincoln's death day, I guess.
Yeah, death day. That's a good way of putting it.
those two trades, they're really good. Anybody, I think that if you're interested in Hellboy and you don't necessarily want to start with like the deeper stuff of Seed and Wake, you can just pick up like volumes 3 and 4 and get a lot of little stories and get a better feel for Hellboy and then go back or forward if you want.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, you could definitely do that, I think.
Yeah, those ones I don't think are so continuity or like time sensitive. No. Like it doesn't matter. You can pick them up. It doesn't matter. And there's a great Christmas story.
Out of time, that, yeah.
Yeah, there's because some of the stories come from the old Dark Horse Presents, I guess they call that one Volume 1 of Dark Horse Presents because they're really high numbers.
I was actually a big fan of that Christmas story because I have like an extreme love for like cheesy, crappy Christmas specials.
It was well done, though.
It was. No. I'm not calling it crappy. You know what I mean. All right.
Yeah. I bought that one and I bought the actual comic and I guess like Jeff Darrow does a pinup in it, like a Christmas themed pinup with Hellboy in it. And it's just really cool. What if you guys ever find that issue? It's a really cool one to pick up because I don't think it's all in the trade because there's a couple of extra little bits and pieces. So if you find the comic, it's really, really cool.
And then Right Hand of Doom, that's got, like you said, it's got the pancakes one in it. That's like two
pieces. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's just, yeah, it's just a little nothing. And that was really loud.
And then it's got more folklore adaptations and stuff. But then it's got the Right Hand of Doom story, which explains... you know, Hellboy's stone fist and everything and what he's supposed to be doing on Earth and all that.
Yeah, we saw the cover of his potential future. I think it was Wake the Devil number 5 where he's got the horns and the flaming crown and everything. And then, yeah, this one explains the actual hand a little more. And I think one of these two trades is when Dave Stewart actually comes on for the first time too, the colorist extraordinaire. I want to say this the fourth one. No, I'm not sure. And I only mentioned him because I just saw his name. I was looking at the Right Hand of Doom, and he's basically colors everything in the Mignolaverse from...
He's practically done everything. Yeah, so, yeah,
the time he joined in the late 90s until now, he's been the colorist, so... And he's amazing. That was my point.
And you think about how many other things he works on, too, and all of it is amazing.
Oh, yeah, he deserves his... he had, like, 6 Eisners back-to-back-to-back-to-back at one point.
I think Dave Stewart is, like, one of the most important people working in comic books right now.
Right now and before and, you know, in the future. He's fantastic. Yeah. For sure.
Okay, so we got the short stories covered a little bit.
See, Joey's dragging this one along, guys. I don't even have to be the host this time.
Well, yeah. I'm a little slightly more prepared than last time I was here.
That's true. You were terrible last time. I got emails like, don't let that guy on the show again. And I mean, the emails were from Derek, but whatever.
Thanks, Derek. Appreciate it.
that's not true.
Chime in any time, eh, Derek? It's your show, too.
He's a dirty liar.
Don't let us hog the mic from you.
Derek, what did you think? No. What did you think of the Conqueror Worm? The Conqueror Worm, I can't talk, to save my life, which are technically Hellboy number 17 to 20, since how you don't really get trades too often. What did you think of this one?
I liked it because I felt that it was kind of Mignola getting into kind of maybe deeper themes.
It's true.
Yeah. The whole man monster thing, I guess. Wait, isn't this the one with all the Edgar Allan Poe quotes and whatnot?
Yes, it is. Yeah, Conqueror Worm is one of his poems, right?
So. Oh my god. Yeah, okay, that makes me sound stupid. That's
okay, Joe. Yeah. It's okay, Derek. It's Joey's here. That's what he does.
Thanks, Joe.
I'm not doing this on purpose, you motherfuckers.
goddamn no. Scientist, arrogant bit. No, I'm just kidding. This is also, I think, one of the first ones that actually goes back, Derek, to like Seed of Destruction. He's talking to, he meets one of the guys that says he was there at Hellboy's birth. And there's, you know, remember those aliens that we see in Seed of Destruction? And we're kind of like, where did this come from?
Oh, I always forget about those. Yeah.
Yeah. I only remember them because like, I always see the toy. I see the toy at eBay a lot. It's like, where the fuck is this alien?
Are they ever going to use those fucking things again?
Probably not. I think
they're like interdimensional guardians that know that the humans are trying to wake up the Ogdru Jihad.
Yeah, I think this Conqueror Worm is like the last time you see them. I can't remember.
Are they in that one? I've got it in front of me here right now. I'm trying to find them.
The guy that said he was there when he was born or something, I guess he dies. And he goes back to the true form of the alien. And then this also has Roger and Lobster Johnson, Ghost Lobster Johnson.
This is the first appearance of Lobster Johnson, yeah.
Yeah.
Who goes on to now have his own series in the Mignolaverse.
And they're great series, by the way. Anybody that wants to read them, there's lots of great, like, pulpy, noir, Hellboy universe craziness in Lobster Johnson.
If you like pulp action, like The Shadow and Green Hornet and classic stuff like that, you'll like Lobster Johnson. It's like that stuff, but with more weird, dark occult kind of stuff.
And then you get crossovers, like the Black Flame will show up.
Yes, exactly.
Crossover's not the right word, but it's a shared universe, so you see characters that you've seen elsewhere.
What were you going to say, Gary?
No, I was going to say that this trade actually might have my favorite art.
It's really good, yeah.
Yeah. It's more...
it's tough to describe.
Not lifelike. That's not the word I'm looking for. That's not what I'm looking for. More, I don't know. Like, it feels like the action... It feels like the action really comes off the page, maybe.
Yeah.
It does that, but...
There's some pretty big in this one.
I think also Mignola... really is a lot more comfortable where he's at with the character. I mean, it's almost been 10 years when this one was originally released. Yeah. So I think he just really, like, even if you look at the cover and you look at the cover of like Seed of Destruction, like Hellboy's even thinner. Like he's kind of like the guy we know now, as opposed to the more 90s, like he was bulkier in Seed, which I didn't like. I like the one we have now. But yeah,
there's slight differences. Yeah,
he's more comfortable with the character and the place, I think, than anything.
Well, the artwork in Conqueror Worm, that like the style that Mignola uses in this one, this is pretty much how all of his stuff looked after this, right up to Hellboy in Hell.
Yeah,
Engaging. So, engaging, I think, is probably the word I'm looking for.
Okay, no, yeah, I found the alien, Tyler. Yeah, the alien shows up again in Conqueror Worm.
Yes.
I told you that.
I'm actually looking at one of the pages right now with the alien thing or whatever.
And this one has another one of the, what are they, Ogdru Hem, the Ogdru Jihad children?
Oh, yeah. I think Hem is right, yeah. Because that was what the little one was in the Seed of Destruction, right? Or the, not little one.
Yeah, that's right.
The one that Hellboy fights.
Right. Yeah.
So
if I remember correctly, so here's another really weird part that has been around since Seed of Destruction all the way through. The Ogdru Jihad, the seven who are one, created by, correct me if I'm wrong, renegade angels before the first race of man, right?
Yeah, something crazy deep like that.
Crazy like that. And then they created their own, I think, 169 children or something called the Ogdru Hem.
Yeah.
And those are the crazy huge monsters that show up throughout Hellboy and BPRD.
Isn't it like 300 something?
Oh, yeah, it is 369, sorry.
And I knew it was more than that.
Yeah, yeah. So those are usually like the giant monsters, like the one that shows up in Worm. Those are the Ogdru Hem.
Yes.
So
yeah,
there you go.
It's like a... Yeah, it's a what's the word I'm looking for? The Ogdru Hem or whatever is the name, like an overall name for them, like the monsters, right? It's not just the one guy, it's the overall.
That's right.
Because they call the Ogdru Jihad or whatever the dragons, and then how do they cannot be considered
the seven who are one?
Yeah, they call them the dragons. I'm just trying to think if there was another name that they call these, but I can't find it.
Probably a bunch. And then so that introduces a whole other part, right? They're around since before the race of man. And so creeping up throughout all the Hellboy books, especially with Liz Sherman, is you get all these first race of man, the Hyperboreans, like the Hyperborean shaman that shows up and speaks to Liz Sherman, right?
Right.
Which is really cool. And they've been starting to dig a bit more into that in like the Witchfinder series, the first one. And
well, even BPRD with
the
one that Heron did, where the guy gets the sword.
Yeah, Abyss of Time. That's one of my favorites.
Yes, and they kind of touch a little bit further back in the histories there.
And apparently, they're planning on expanding that, and that one was a big hit. So, I mean, he's got the history of his universe down from like before prehistory all the way up until what's going on in the world now,
and the future. I think, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, yeah.
But the character whose name escapes you that gets the sword, the one of the coolest
Agent
swords.
Howard's.
Yeah, one of the coolest swords I've ever seen drawn or used.
That's the one that Edward Gray has in the first Witchfinder.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
I always love that design. It's just cool, right?
It looks cool, yeah.
I would love to see even just a spin-off miniseries of that character and his histories, and you know, because he's. The original guy went through time or something and now is taking over this Andrew's body or whatever, right?
It's you know what, they never really explain it specifically. He finds the sword and it's in an old temple of the Heliopic Brotherhood of Ra that Edward Gray had raided like decades previous.
Yeah.
And they find the sword in there and he's holding the sword and he basically goes into a coma and he lives a life as this ancient Hyperborean monster slayer. And when he comes out of the coma, now he's basically this guy now.
And needless to say, James Heron fucking kills it. One of my favorite BPRD artists, man, ever.
Fuck me it. Too. Me too.
Or any artist for that matter. He's so good.
But, straying off the path quite a bit.
Yeah, we're talking BPRD a lot.
That's okay.
But
I mean,
everybody needs to know that it's one universe, and if one thing happens here, it's going to affect other stuff. And
that's right.
Before we get a little bit further even, unlike Marvel and DC, Mignola's always made a point of what happens stays that way. You can't, like, for example, it's Hell on Earth right now. The BPRD is dealing with monsters everywhere. The world is, like, half destroyed. It's just crazy.
Yeah, England is gone.
Yeah, and Mignola's always said, that's how it's going to stay. I'm not going to just wave a magic wand and it's going to be fine again. That's not how this works.
Well, how many years has Roger been dead? And think of, you know, how many letters you've seen in the letter columns bring Roger back.
Pretty much every issue is like, so when's Roger coming back?
But he's dead, right? And they're not going to change that.
They have the top half of his body somewhere still. So
yeah, it's pretty.
If anybody can come back, if anybody can come back, it's the guy that's just made of random shit.
Yeah, no, I agree.
So, but again, but Mignola hasn't done it because he's I killed him off. So then, you know, spoilers. Anybody that gets mad about that, and he's gone now. So now we move on. Here's some new characters, and let's go.
Yep.
So
he was gonna kill off Liz Sherman after Wake the Devil.
Oh really? Oh, you know, I do remember. I do remember hearing that. I thought somebody
convinced him not to.
I thought she was gonna die. I think Scott Alley did a BPRD mini with Mignola called "Monsters and Something." Monsters.
Being
or
human.
Maybe it was just called "Monsters" or something. But it was very Liz-centric. I thought they're gonna kill her then too. And she's always kind of been the weakest character for me.
I think she's great now though in BPRD.
I was just gonna say she's much more badass now, like confronting the Black Flame in the last BPRD issue, right?
Like yeah, she's fucking really awesome now.
Yeah.
So then, okay, but next up in Hellboy After Conqueror Worm is the trade is Strange Places, and the miniseries that are in that one are The Third Wish and The Island.
And The Island is the last issue that Mignola draws until Hellboy and Hell.
That's right. And along with The Wild Hunt, which we'll get to very shortly, look at the time.
Joey's the host now, folks. You don't need me.
Strange Place is probably one of my two favorites. The Island, especially.
I don't know about you guys, but I think Mignola really did go all out. I can totally understand why he needed to get away from drawing it for a while and just stick to like covers and writing. There was so much
wild artwork in this.
Yeah, so much detail and craziness and his designs for monsters and underwater stuff. Like, essentially, Hellboy gets a nail banged into one of his horns, and I think that helps him like breathe underwater or something. And he's underwater for I want to say like a year or 6 months or like two years, even longer than that.
Yeah.
So yeah, wow. Really 2 years? I gotta read that again.
I reread this shit all the time.
Yeah. See, I got so much stuff on the go. I barely have time to finish the first fucking library edition.
if I'm out of new stuff to read, I'm rereading Hellboy.
Yeah, I gotta start doing that.
So yeah, they drill the nail into his head, and the weird underwater lizard talking mermaid thing, the Bog Rouge, keeps him prisoner because she doesn't want the right hand of doom to get out and destroy the world.
Right. And you can actually buy that nail as a replica from some website that Mignola's pimping out. It's really cool. I'm very tempted to do it, actually. It's got like a little BPRD tag on it, like it's a case file.
Yeah. I remember seeing the ad for that in the BPRD books, and I had no clue what it was until you just mentioned that.
Yeah, that's really cool. What did you think of the island and stuff there, since I hear it's so quiet?
I enjoyed the island. I thought that was really cool, especially the horn thing. I did have something to say about the Third Wish. I found it interesting because before I read it, I had actually read somewhere that Mignola, I guess, wrote it like right after, I guess, 9/11. And I guess he contributes that to like the darkness of it. Yeah.
The Third Wish, the first one that's the one with the really cool lines on the cover. I think Mignola is one of his best covers. And I think even one of his personal favorites, he's recently admitted. But there's a lot of like African history or folk tales and stuff in it.
Yeah, it's
like
really
said,
cool.
It is really dark for sure. It's dark and it's ominous, and it like it really, I don't know, sends the stories forward and kind of gives you almost like a taste of things to come.
Definitely.
So I mean, it's another great story. As a matter of fact, I think the Third Wish number one is the other issue that I'm missing.
Oh no.
Yeah, I mean, I have the library edition, so I'm not as stress out about buying it as if I didn't have those, but
he starts hanging out with ghosts too in the island.
Yeah.
Getting drunk with ghosts.
Right. He's on that's the old shack or whatever he's in, and he's drinking whiskey or something with him.
Yeah. Flipping through. Fuck, there's a lot of really cool stuff in this one.
There's probably, based on time, far too much to handle.
Too much. That's what I'm saying. I'm trying to skim it down to the good ones.
I want to talk about, because I really want to get into the stuff with Duncan Figueredo here.
Okay, that's where we are
volume,
next.
Yes, volume number 7, 10, and 11 volume number 7 and 10, excuse me, are all collected into Library Edition 4, so I just want to kind of cover them there. Another two trades that have bunch of little stories in them. There is some important ones and whatever, but the library edition, I find, because like it's got Richard Corbin doing the art, and I don't mind him, but it was such...
Yeah, I like him normally.
It was such a pull away from Mignola that I actually think that Volume 4 of the library editions are my least favorite. I still really like them, but they're my least favorite as far as that art change. And because I think there's a lot of different artists throughout the trade.
More than usual, anyway. Both trades,
yeah, because this is the first time that, again, Mignola was burnt out after the island. And, you know, he started getting little stories from little artists here and there. And they're still interesting. Like, Makoma is a really good story. The Ghoul is a really good story. So, but again, I mean, Makoma had Richard Corbin in it too. And it's just, there's lots of Richard Corbin in this stuff. And if you don't like him, I don't know how well you're really going to enjoy this. But there's still lots of important stuff and still definitely worth the read.
There you go.
Okay, now we're Duncan Ferrito stuff. It actually starts 8 and 9, which is the
Darkness Calls.
Yeah, 8 is Darkness Calls, 9 is The Wild Hunt. These are a lot longer stories because Duncan Ferrito came on, so Mignola didn't have to draw it himself. So I think he might have.
They are a lot longer, like 6 issues in length or whatever.
6 Darkness and 8 for Wild Hunt.
8 for Wild Hunt. Jeez, okay, there you go.
So again, because he had him, he had Ferrito. He definitely went a little crazy. Both fantastic stories, and they really lead up to the Fury in the Storm and Hellboy and Hell.
Yeah, the big ending.
Yeah, and lots of stuff starts to make sense, and there's lots of Arthenian or whatever, Arthurian shit in here. And there's lots of stuff that even I've missed the first time I read it and the second time
I read it too.
Because there's just so much stuff going on, and you gotta, oh, where that, I remember this one time. You know, 10 years ago, this happened, and, you know, lots of Baba Yaga.
That's one thing that probably
stuff,
needs to be said about these books is, I mean, you almost have to reread them. There's so many weird little things that you don't pick up on until you get an explanation later on.
Oh, there is no almost. You definitely have to.
Yeah. Okay, well, there you go.
there's no question. I mean, there's just so much stuff that he starts packing into this, and, you know, you blink or you stop to appreciate the art, and, you know, you don't quite read a speech bubble, and you miss something.
Yeah,
and
but
you know,
Darkness Calls, that's, it focuses heavy on the Baba Yaga, this one.
Yes.
And I think she's one of the coolest antagonists in the series.
Well, she definitely gets really cool towards the end there, with the eye and everything.
She's so creepy.
Oh, completely. Like, definitely one of the better ones that he pulled out of folklore air. You know, out of thin
air.
She
flies around in a big mortar and carries a pestle with her, and she's got wooden legs, and it's weird.
Isn't it one big wooden chicken leg or something? Wasn't that
her house? Her house is on chicken legs.
Oh, that's what it is. Right.
Yeah, and it walks around Yggdrasil, the world tree.
Right, and this has got Kashi, one of the, I don't know, he's got, Hellboy has a big battle with this guy. He's like an old Japanese warrior or something that Baba Yaga tries to get to kill Hellboy.
Yes.
He's got like the Fu Manchu going on.
Yeah.
Wow.
Do you remember that, Derek?
Yeah, I do.
You got something to add, Derek? Sometimes you just like make a noise, so I don't know. You're just like,
No. Well, I did.
You talk sooner. Just be like, no, hey guys, not. I have something to contribute. And just like,
I had something profound as shit too, but it's gone. Whatever.
No.
Derek.
I know. Yeah, whatever.
We're gonna go into overtime if we're gonna continue this one. Other than that, or we have a part two next week, boys.
I don't know. What do you think?
What do you think, Derek?
We can have a part two.
Because then we can finish talking about Hellboy, and we can, you know, expand a little bit on the other books, too.
See, everybody, this is a live show, so we decide if we're going to end it live on the show. We made no plans about this earlier.
Yeah.
So, I think that's a good
idea. It'll give me a chance to catch up on the few things that I didn't read.
Oh, there you go, see? So, you know, I think we're going to stop. We're going to stop with Darkness Calls. And
okay.
We really didn't talk about the Wild Hunt, which is great. I mean, it's 8 issues.
That's my favorite.
We want to give Hellboy and Mignola and all those things, you know, they're due. We still should talk about BPRD. We still should talk about, you know, the 1940 series. We still should talk about Vampire and Sledgehammer and Witchfinder and Abe Sapien solo series and, you know, Lobster Johnson. And, like, there's so much to talk about. An hour won't do it. And we know everybody's attention span doesn't generally last more than an hour. So, hey, happy Hellboy Day yesterday or Saturday, hey. You know, depending. Derek, so you want to say your goodbyes?
Goodbye, everybody.
Derek, he's so fun and interesting. Joey, do you want to say your goodbyes?
Thanks for having me back, guys.
We will have you back next week as well, even though you never for shut sure. up and you take over as host. You bastard.
That's how I do.
So, hey, next time maybe we'll have Joey completely. He'll do the intro. He'll do everything. I'll just sit back and drink some water or something. But hey, you know what? It's been a great show. So much to talk about. Join us next week for more Hellboy and Mignola. It's time to watch The Walking Dead, everybody. Have a good night.
Amen.